This is the Hagman and Hagman Report. That's right, HagmanReport.com, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern weeknights. That's, you can hear us every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Global Star Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, BTR, and, of course, live on YouTube. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thank you so much for your support, for your kindness, your emails. My goodness, your letters and cards that you've sent. Read them all. They're just tremendous. And thank you for everything you've done and being a part of our lives. Our guest, Mr. Matt Truella, his website, lessermagistrate.com, defytyrants.com as well. Two books. Referencing the Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrate and the Magdeburg Confession. Interesting. These are tools now to help us fight the perversion of our laws. Well, I shouldn't even say that. That's an incorrect statement. The perversion of the perception of our laws. Folks, let me ask you something here. As we prepare to saddle for battle, as we are saddling for battle, let me ask you, how are your preps doing? Have you checked your pantry lately? What about, your long-term storable food? Well, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is the place to go for long-term storable food. They've got some amazing buys right now. You know, one of my favorites is the freeze-dried pineapple, 38 servings. Oh, is that good? I eat that right out of the can. And they've got some pretty hard to get items right now in their food supplies. Some pretty hard to get stuff here. But the Thrive brand that they've got, I don't think you'll find any better prices anywhere other than AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. For example, right now, and this is something I'm looking at myself here. When I'm looking at my pantry, I'm looking at what we're short on. Well, certainly the egg powder, for example. It's not that easy to get, especially the non-contaminated, if you will. Things like egg powder. How about mashed potatoes? 22 servings. Under $8 for a pantry size can or a large number 10 can? Absolutely. Just go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com and check out the Thrive brand products, the pancake mix. And all of these can be held, stored for well over 20 years, so you don't have to worry about food spoilage. This is your answer to survival preps. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Getting back to our guest, Mr. Truella, I'm going to thank you so much for holding over with us and thank you for your time and getting this information out because we really have a problem in this country and we're exporting the problem to all across the West. How in the world do we address it? We've got to saddle for battle. We've got to push back. We've got to look out for the rights of the preborn, as you describe them. We've got to stop the madness. We've got to stop this putting our children in harm's way where we've got perverts, potentially using the same facilities, shower rooms as our daughters, young daughters, young sons and grandchildren. I mean, this is madness. What do we do? Help us map this out, how we can fight this madness and tyranny. And by the way, I just want to say one thing before you answer this question, because this really tripped my trigger, folks. When I saw the reference by this intellectually bankrupt individual out there saying, America, you're still free. You still got the First Amendment. You still got your guns. You're not under tyranny. Okay, really? I don't know what your definition of tyranny is. Now, stop me because I'm going to go on a rant here. So, but what do we do, Mr. Troll? What do we do? How do we fight this?
Well, one of the things we have to do is engage our magistrates at the state, county, and local level. And that's one of the things that's been good about this doctrine is people have been learning about it. They've begun to do exactly that. You have to make relationship with these men and women. You have to sit down with them and explain this doctrine to them. And, we have other helps that you can give. Some people don't like to read. You know, we live in that culture. We have little videos available at our site, 2 to 3 minutes long, that go over the main tenets of the doctrine, you know, if that works better. And, you know, and then, of course, the book itself really engages. But what I found is a lot of, there's a lot of people out there who are magistrates who love to talk about political theory. They love to talk about how our government's out of control, it's too big, we need to limit it, this is what I'm for. And then when you ask them, so how exactly do you see that taking place, they're kind of like stunned, you know, like, and then when you tell them, well, you actually have a blueprint on how that can be accomplished, it's called the Doctrine of Lesser Magistrate. Here's how it unfolds here in the United States regarding what our founders established regarding a true federalism. Oh, then it's totally crickets. You know, they love to talk about theory all day and, you know, the slogans that get them votes. But when it comes to actual application, they don't want to talk about that. So there's those kinds of guys out there. But at the same time, I got to tell you, if you ask my family, I'm one of the most pessimistic people on the planet. They can't believe how encouraged I've been over the last year and a half as I've traveled around. I've been invited into 11 states now to talk to the attorney general, to legislators. I preached a sermon to legislators in Montana, to talk to lieutenant governors, to talk to governor's men. They invite me in. I didn't solicit any of it. They've heard about this from somebody, and they want to learn about it. And the reason they want to learn about it is they realize we have a federal government that is totally out of control, and it has to be reined in. And so they want to see what the doctrine teaches, how it could practically be applied in our day. And they want to know, you know, what's the federal beast going to do if we interpose, if we defy them? And we do know some of the things they'll probably do, but we can't know everything. Sure. So the main thing is to try to set policies and establish yourself prior to interposing so that you can mitigate the response of the federal beast against your interposition. But here's what the first thing I tell all of them is I tell them, before we get into what we can do in regards to actual application of interposition, first I want to tell you what will happen if you don't do anything. You know, if you don't interpose, exactly. If you don't interpose, you afford the tyrant beast the opportunity to begin to establish the next plank of his tyranny. And that's what this federal government has been doing for decades now, because everybody just keeps backing up, stepping back, retreating step by step, and the federal beast takes the ground. It's only when good men do what's needed and necessary, hazard their lives to a certain extent, and defy the beast, that you cannot appease a bully. You learn that early on when you're a kid in school. You have to confront a bully. That's the only thing they understand. And so these magistrates must confront the federal beast, because what that does is it causes the tyrant to come out of his lair. He has to deal with these good men who are taking a stand. And so he's not able to get the cover he gets when good men do nothing. Good men do nothing, he gets to stay in his lair, everybody goes along with it, he starts the next plank of his tyranny. If good men take a stand, oh, he has to come out and do something to them, which exposes the tyrant, makes him show his fangs, and exposes him for what he is to more people. So it's extremely important for the magistrates to interpose and take action against the federal tyrant in our day.
Okay. All right. And it's so important because not just magistrates in the positions as you describe them as governors and sheriffs and positions of power far below the federal government, but also this applies, in my view anyway, this applies to Christian leaders, to obviously Christian leaders can't they're not in a position to enforce what you're referencing here, the law, such as a sheriff would be able to. But we
right.
got
But boy, their duty is to rally the. Right.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you have, okay. I have a chapter in my book on the role of the people regarding the doctrine of lesser magistrate, and the role of the people is massive. First off, usually the magistrates will never do what's needed and necessary unless the people prod them to do what's needed and necessary. There's very few Judge Roy Moores in this world, okay, who will just do it because they fear God, they love their neighbor, they love Christ, and they'll defy the tyrant. Very few Judge Roy Moores. Most of these guys need to be prodded. So that's the first role of the people, is to make sure they prod their magistrates to take a stand against the tyranny of the tyrant authority, and then to assure them that they will give of everything they have, you know, of their possessions, of their very persons, of their prayers, rallying around the magistrate when he does take a stand. And that's the goodness of the doctrine. One of the goodnesses, it helps form relationship between the people and their more near lesser magistrates like state, county, and local officials. And that's extremely important. They need to know, and I talk to magistrates all the time, they'll tell you how much they hear from the wicked people and how they rarely ever hear from the good people. And that's a sad state or testimony regarding the Christian people in this nation. But again, it goes back to the pulpits, neutralizing everybody, thinking that's unspiritual to have anything to do with governmental matters. In fact, I address that mentality and take it to task full bore in my book. I have an appendix entitled "The Laws of a Nation Should Mirror the Law and Justice of God." And what I show in there is the importance of the magistrates to make good law that mirrors the law of God. Because if the magistrates make law which is contrary to the law of God, what it does is it gives people the opportunity to ignore or to justify their sin. But, so like when it comes to killing the preborn, or like when it comes to homosexual activity, those types of things, when they're made illegal, as they are in God's law, then people more readily see them for what they are, recognize their guilt before God and their need for Christ. But when the magistrates spit in the face of Christ, do something totally contrary to that, as they have in our country, then it allows people to justify or ignore their sin. So the importance of the magistrates and regarding these matters is hugely important. But the pietist, you know, he thinks, oh, that's all mere moralizing. That's all a mere waste of time. What they don't understand is, no, that's important too, because all three great governments that God has established, which are family government, church government, and civil government, all have the duty to make known the knowledge and glory of the Lord. And they all work in some fashion to point men to Christ. We as the church, of course, point them directly through the preaching of the gospel. Turn from your sin, believe in Jesus Christ. Family government points people to Christ. And even in the laws that a family makes, points the young children to Christ. We teach our children, don't steal. If they do steal, there's a sanction for it. And so it is with civil government. They too, by the laws which they make, by the function that God has given civil government, help men see their need for Christ. So when they make law which is contrary to the law and word of God, first off, William Blackstone said, whenever that happens, it shouldn't be suffered amongst us. And this was the thinking of Western man for nearly 1,500 years. Whether you read, John of Salisbury in the 12th century, or you read William Blackstone in the 18th century, they all pointed to God's law as the higher law of which all men are accountable and all governments of men are accountable. So Blackstone, who is the most cited legal scholar by America's founders, said that whenever law is made contrary to the law of God, it should not be suffered amongst us. But unfortunately, the Christians have totally abandoned the field, and so they're not involved in the political process, which is extremely important when it comes to the doctrine of lesser magistrate, because again, you must rally your magistrates. I'd start out my book, if I could, with a story about Governor Publius Petronius. And in 39 AD, Caligula was the emperor at the time. If you know anything about him, he's like tyranny personified. And he got ticked off at the Jews. And so he decided that he was going to get a statue of himself made and placed in the temple there in Jerusalem. So he made a law of the emperor, sent it to Governor Petronius, who was the governor of Palestine at the time, and ordered him to make the statue and place it in the Jewish temple. Well, Governor Petronius had the statue made and planned on having it placed there. The Jews got wind of it, and the Jews went to Governor Petronius and said, don't do this. This is immoral. We cannot live in peaceful coexistence with this desecration of our temple. You know, don't obey the law of the emperor. He responded by saying, well, I'm going to obey because I want to live. Well, these Jews weren't like, you know, your average good American who wrote his one letter and, oh, well, it didn't change. I'm back to my materialism. No, these people didn't go home. They actually ignored their fields, which needed planting at that time. In fact, more and more of them kept coming to, they reached the numbers of, according to Josephus, of 30,000 men, women, and children demonstrating before the governor, remonstrating before him, saying, don't do this. He even removed himself from Ptolemy, where he was, over to Tiberias. They followed him there, and they laid their necks down before him and said, kill us now. It's better that we be dead than the emperor put his statue in our temple. Well, finally, Governor Petronius, from the prodding of the people, relented. And he gathered them, called them to where he was. 12,000 Jews showed up. And there was about 12,000 Roman legion soldiers there when they arrived at the arena where Governor Petronius called them. So they didn't know what was going to happen. They were like, oh, wow, are we going to get killed here or what? And Governor Petronius stood up. You know, you had the Jews on one side, Roman legion on the other. And he read the law of the emperor, which resistance to that law regarding the statue was death. And then he rolled it up and he walked out and stood, showing his interposition, stood between the Roman legions and the Jews and declared that he would not obey the law of the emperor and that he would send word to the emperor exhorting him to rescind his law. Well, he did that, and when Emperor Caligula got the letter from Governor Petronius, he, of course, was outraged in good tyrant fashion. And he sent word by ship back to Governor Petronius to kill himself. Well, in God's providence, 2 weeks later, Caligula's Praetorian Guard assassinates him. And fortunately for Governor Petronius, the ship carrying word for him to kill himself arrived after the ship carrying the news that the emperor had been assassinated, and the statue never was placed in the temple. It's a great story of the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, and it shows how important the people are. So what you brought up about the clergy, oh yeah, they are massively important. In fact, I'll tell you this, there's more clergy, there's some magistrates that are getting this. Just this last week, I received an email from a man, and he wants 1,000 of my books. 1,000. Okay, that's pretty phenomenal. To put in the hands of pastors. So I call him up. I find out that he's a legislator in a certain state. I'm not going to tell you what state it was. And the governor of the state is going to start holding meetings in his mansion, inviting all the pastors of the state to come. If you know anything about pastors, oh, I get to go to the governor's mansion. Oh, yeah, they'll go. Yeah, they'll be there. And they want to put my book into the hand of every pastor that comes to these series of meetings that they're going to hold. Somebody in this governor's entourage gets it, and he understands the importance of the people and the importance of the clergy understanding this doctrine in order to see interposition accomplished. So I think things are building. There's nobody controlling the strings at one point. This is totally decentralized. I'm astounded. People send me stuff all the time, people writing on the doctrine, pastors preaching on the doctrine, people holding meetings, teaching others about the doctrine, people putting the book into, you know, libraries and on. It's just really amazing to watch. And I don't look at the majority of the people who are doing nothing. I don't. I look at the handful of people who are doing something. Because, again, we don't need a majority in order to see things change in our nation, nor will we ever have a majority in that regard.
That's true.
So I'm very encouraged.
You know, sadly, we have the numbers. We could win simply on the numbers or by the numbers because of, we outnumber them. But you're right. It's not gonna happen. And now, so if, and the practical application of this, because we talk, you know, people will say, well, you guys talk a great talk, but you know, what have you done? And I'm kind of results oriented to some extent with respect to, I mean, we can only do so much, but I also look at you know, the results. Case in point, for example, the Center for Medical Progress, when they went in to expose the sale of baby parts, allegedly, I guess I have to say that, you know, with all this lawfare that's going on, allegedly at Planned Parenthood, when the Center for Medical Progress went in there and exposed this, what, a year ago, this past July. I mean, this is a good thing, but it just amazes me to see the inactivity. Well, I guess I'm kind of going where you said, yeah, I don't pay attention to those. But you know, Planned Parenthood was exposed a year ago, this past July, allegedly selling baby parts by the Center for Medical Progress. But what do we do? I mean, what can we do to further, help me out here. What can we do to continue that fight? See that? You know what? And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get the call back. That was Matt Chiarella that dropped off here. But isn't it interesting? And people may say, well, it just happens, you know. I don't believe in coincidences. And, anymore. I don't believe in coincidences. You know, we're talking about a very volatile issue. Remember the picture with Hillary Rodham Clinton holding the hands with the Planned Parenthood director saying, yes, we won. It's, you know, it's a victory. We're talking about a hot button issue here with respect to Planned Parenthood, Hillary Clinton, especially in this election cycle.
Back.
All right. Sorry about that. Brother, you know,
sure.
It's interesting, but what can we do to further advance this? I want to go to my sheriff and say, look, you know, if there was a Planned Parenthood facility, for example, in our county, I'd want to go to the sheriff and say, you know what, there's murders taking place over here. Close them down. Use your ability as a lesser magistrate, as a sheriff, to close Planned Parenthood down. There's murders taking place over there. But
exactly.
Would that work? I mean,
oh yeah.
Does it work?
I'm telling you, it's so important. You know, like people say, well, you know, Joe Smith over here already talked to the sheriff. Why should I talk to him about this? Because he needs to know how there's more than just Joe Smith who understands this doctrine and expects him to apply it. You know, gotcha. He needs to see more and more people coming and talking to him. So I always tell people that, you know, if you have, there's 20 of you, all 20 of you make separate appointments going, he needs to hear it over and over again. You know, here in my own county, believe it or not, they actually asked me to present the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. They invited the public in and we ended up with about 54 people there and about 15 magistrates of all different sorts, mm-hmm. from state legislator to the sheriff. And I've maintained a relationship with the sheriff since then, that he loved to learn more duties. And how it works. And so information, this knowledge, that's kind of where we're at, hugely important. At the same time, we need to see acts of interposition, and we have. I'll share an example with you. A year ago, June, I spoke on this doctrine in Idaho. Two legislators showed up there and two legislators watched by, they were broadcasting it. And the sheriff wouldn't come. He thought, oh, that's too radical. So he didn't come. Well, get this, just 7 weeks later, a Vietnam veteran was having his guns seized by the federal government because they said he was economically irresponsible to have gun ownership. And this, as I found out, is something they've been doing to veterans around the country. Not just the mind, but their economic situation, they're taking their guns away. Well, this legislator who just learned the doctrine of lesser magistrate 7 weeks earlier, she contacts another legislator, they contact the sheriff, and two state legislators, the sheriff, and about 90 people stood in front of this man's house. And this, you can Google it. This is a big news story in Idaho. And then finally, after about 3 hours, the feds sent some lackey out there who said, okay, we won't take his guns today. And they were able to subsequently, after that, work things out so that the federal government never did seize the Vietnam veterans' guns. So, anyway, there's practical application in the immediate right there, you know. And I could share a few other stories with you, too, if you like.
I love that victory. That's a victory.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We're coming up against the break. Our guest is Matt Chiarella. His website is lessermagistrate.com. You can go there, bookmark his site, check out the resource material, listen to sermons, other interviews, or buy his books, The Doctrine of Lesser Magistrates.
And you can download, Joe, you can download a handout, what do you call it, a leaflet from that under resources.
Yeah, you go into resources. There's a number of interesting resources. I'm on the page right now, 3 pages of it. And hand them out to your pastor. Hand them out to your sheriff. Do what Matt is saying. We'll be right back, folks, with our final segment after this.
Lesser magistrates is historic. It's a historic tool. It provides us with guidelines for proper and legitimate resistance. We are the resistance. We often hear Alex Jones say that. We are the resistance. And truly, we are the resistance, and we better be the resistance. We better stand up, and we better get our act together, and we better unite. And nothing frustrates me more than Christians sniping at other Christians over issues of religiosity or whatever, however that's pronounced. Oh, you're not doing it, you can't do, you know, it's, you gotta conform to this and conform to that. No, you know, it's about time that we shed those, preconceived and arbitrary, capricious attacks and unite under the banner of our Lord and Savior. You know, we've got a magnificent, tool right here. We've got a magnificent asset in the form of our guest pastor, Mr. Matt Chiarella, and his website, lessermagistrate.com, defytyrants.com, his books. You know, they are blueprints. They're blueprints for our response to the unjust, immoral laws or decrees that have been perceivably, is that a word, perceivably? If not, I just made it, thrust upon us the perception of legality, which is wrong, obviously. You cannot, as Greg Jackson says, an unjust or law that does not conform to God's law or the Constitution is no law at all. I'm paraphrasing now. But you want an instruction manual? Go to lessermagistrate.com. In fact, bookmark that site. Tell others about that site. DefyTyrants.com takes you in the same spot, but the resources there are fantastic, as well as the blueprints in the form of his books. But see, we have to unite. And Mr. Chiarella, thank you so much for holding through and carrying on. Yes, you mentioned the Idaho story where it took the threat of a veteran losing his gun ownership. Oh yeah, wait, you know, to that idiotic Canadian stating that, oh, you know, America, just because we're not under martial law, you know, and We have our guns. We're not under tyranny. It's, you know, that's just bogus. But thanks for pointing out that we can. We you know, we've got the ability to stand up and fight, and I really appreciate that. We should turn out in numbers against this, shouldn't we? There are victories. Yeah. There are
absolutely.
Victories.
Yeah, and there's other things that are being done at a practical level because you know when I wrote the book, I was just like, I got other topics I want to write about too before I go because I'm 56 now. You kind of see the end of your days, you know, at that point coming.
You face mortality. Yeah, you do. And I know.
Exactly.
You know what? Yeah, and thank you for mentioning that because a lot of our audience, me, you know, I'm looking at myself. I'm thinking, if I don't change, if I don't help enact change, then who will? And you look at yourself, you know, that you're facing mortality, your own mortality. And thank you for bringing that up because to me that's a very important aspect of what we're talking about. But I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, sir.
No, absolutely. No, it's true. So, you know, I was like, okay, I'll write this book. Hopefully somebody will buy it. Well, the book is sold like crazy. And what I ran into was people are like, exactly what you said. So how do we have application? You know, I was just so encouraged because there are actually people who want to have application. And even when we have defeats, when application is applied, God uses that for his purposes also. Like, I don't know if you know or not, but we nearly had a state openly defy the Obergefell opinion by the judiciary, and that was the state of Tennessee. And they had the votes and everything to actually defy, and it was the GOP leadership and the largest pro-family organization in the state that stopped the whole thing from happening. And, of course, okay, they ran into the federal
that,
courts.
Folks? Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? It was our side, supposedly our side. I didn't mean to talk over you, but I just, this happens more often than not. Go ahead, and it just chaps my lips here.
You're absolutely right. It happens, and it was so grievous, because while the leader of the largest pro-life, pro-family group in Tennessee is testifying before the committee, which was almost all Republicans, the homosexuals that showed up there, they were looking at each other like, we don't even have to testify. This guy's doing everything we want to do, and so we don't have to say anything. And they didn't. And, of course, the committee just killed the bill, and that was the end of it. You know, in Oklahoma, earlier this year, there was an actual bill of abolition, you know, immediate interposition, total abolition of abortion, declared abortion to be murder, no exceptions. You know, it's the killing of an innocent person. And it was the pro-life leaders and the GOP leadership that killed that bill in Oklahoma. One of the things that's good about what happened with that bill and with what happened in Tennessee is it exposes people for who they are. You know, if you don't bring these types of bills forward for interposition, for just to defy, and again, this is what we're talking about. You have to defy this judiciary. You cannot keep going back into the courts. You cannot keep following this paradigm. They are the tyrant. The other branches of government must stand in interposition. And so a governor is so massively important to seeing interposition take place at a state level here in the United States, the way that we're set up. I don't think right now we have a governor. We may. You know, I've seen inklings where, yeah, there's some really good stuff going on there with a few of these governors. But I can see men who are on their way up to governorship who are a stronger stripe than the men that are currently there. And as you pointed out, this federal government's only going to continue to become more lawless, more tyrannical, more corrupt, more obese in its bureaucracies and invasions of our lives. And so the demand and the desire for interposition is only going to grow. Like, this whole thing with the Doctrine of Lesser Magistrates at first floor right now, it's still on its way up. It's got a long way to go. And it's going to keep going up because one thing we can count on is the federal government to continue to play the tyrant and to continue to increase its tyranny in the nation. And like I said before, men will forbear but it comes to a point where they no longer can, where they no longer can act indifferent toward the unjust or immoral or unconstitutional actions of their federal government, and they must get involved. And we're reaching that point, and it's very encouraging to see. So even in the midst of our failures to see application, there's still goodness that comes from it. It exposes people. If they go to our website, they can read the history on what happened in Tennessee. They can read the history of what happened in Oklahoma. In fact, they can actually see the leader of the pro-life movement that helped kill the bill of interposition, total defiance of Roe v. Wade. They can actually watch him in a radio interview, and they can actually watch him in an interview in the hallway. Those little videotapes of those two interviews did more to help people understand. But yeah, so often it's quote unquote the people on our side that kill anything that's meaningful to see actual change.
We earlier this year we were talking with the fellow radio show host Josh Tully, and he was talking about, you know, marriage and how the people in the church really, you know, screwed up in the first place by asking our government to define marriage, therefore opening the door for them to place the restrictions and do the changes that they had done, you know, saying that if they never would ask the government itself to define marriage, that it would not have come to this, at least not in the way that it did. And Matt, I want to get your opinion on this. This is something that's been developing in the news the last few weeks and even just the last few days. The transgender laws in North Carolina, the state has not conformed to what the administration, Obama administration, how it wants to conform to the transgender bathroom laws. So now they're going in and they're taking away the, you know, the College of North Carolina's ability to play in the NCAA tournament, as well as other sports. And they're going after, you know, the state's universities, and other, big revenue generating areas that have nothing to do with the law of the land or the people who create or accept the laws. How is this going to play out?
Yeah. Well, we could talk too about the collusion and the complicity of corporate America with so much of this evil. Because talking to the magistrates like in North Carolina and Mississippi and Georgia and other places like that, every time they make any law regarding these matters to try to mitigate what the federal beast is doing, the corporations threaten to remove all kinds of money from the states. So that's another thing that has to be addressed, is the complicity of corporate America with this evil here in America. But I sit and watch. I mean, I'm not just sitting and watching, but I watch and wait, because one of the things I've noticed from my reading of history is something happens and God uses it for good. It's a spark. And everything that's gone on before is needed and necessary, even if it ended in failure, even if there was no major victories or anything along the way. All of a sudden something happens and everything is turned upside down overnight. I wrote an article on this called The Straw That Broke the Camel's Back. We'll see if this whole reach by the federal government, because this is their latest tyranny, is what they're doing regarding transgenderism. Because when you look into the cases, it isn't like this is a man who became a woman physically and now wants to go in the woman's bathroom or vice versa. These are people who are still, like, fully a man who just thinks he's a woman and wants to go in the woman's bathroom. But they hide it behind this whole transgendered idea, and it leaves people to thinking that, oh, this is just, you know, of course, you know, the guy went and did that, you know, he looks like a woman now. No, that isn't the case at all in the vast majority of these cases that have come before the courts. So you sit there and you wonder, at what point will there be actual resistance, actual defiance? And I really believe that once we see one state defy, you're going to see more states join in to the resistance. I really believe that, just from my travels and talking with people, as people are sick of it and they're tired of it. And there's men in good places who understand that this is lawless and it needs to be taken to task. So it's extremely important for us to, as Christian people, to make sure that we continue to communicate this to the magistrates that were with them, that, again, we will give of our possession, of our very persons, of our prayers, in order to stand with them if they do what's needed and necessary and interpose against the federal beast. So that's where I see it going, and I am hopeful that maybe we'll see a difference here, because what they've done, even my state, there's 14 states that have, you know, attacked what the federal government is trying to do with this bathroom situation, shower room situation. And it's like, okay, are we just going to feign a fight again? Are we just going to, you know, go to the federal courts, lose, or maybe win for a short time? Because that's what happened with homosexual marriage, you win for a short time, and then they come back a few years later in Claria. And then we're going to run to our constituents and say, oh, well, we put up a fight. Now we have to do this. Boys can go in our daughter's shower rooms. I mean, is that what they're going to do? Only time will tell.
Well, I think with people like with you and people like you, and the more that we get the word out there, we can change things. And
yes,
you're right. You know, when I mentioned before about, you know, what do you do, go to the sheriff, if the more people who do take action, then the more chance we'll have to see change. And I truly believe that to be the case. I know my sheriff, not personally, but I do know that if there were a couple of dozen people even beating on his door over a single issue, you know, I think maybe he would respond. So yeah, this is exactly what we have to do.
Absolutely. Let me share another great story to encourage you. I know our time's getting short. Have you ever heard of Sheriff Nick Finch down in Liberty County, Florida?
No.
Okay, well, in February of 2013, Sheriff Nick Finch comes to work. He's just looking over the roster, who's in his jail. He sees that there's a man in jail for a gun charge. He reads the statute of the gun charge, and his response is, that's an infringement. That statute is an infringement of that man's Second Amendment rights. So he himself went to the man's cell, unlocked it, and let him go. Well, 3 months later, agents show up from the Florida Attorney General's office and from the local, his same county, Liberty County's District Attorney's office, and they arrest him and charge him with 3 counts of malfeasance in office. He's now looking at years in prison, and the governor removes him from office. So here's a man who's been in law enforcement for over 20 years, and they've taken away how he puts food on his family's table. And he's looking at literally years in prison. Well, the people didn't respond by simply saying, you know, well, gee, I hope that works out okay for good old Sheriff Finch. They actually rallied outside the jail with nearly 200 people that very night. And then they held subsequent rallies, sometimes in the thousands, after that, and they gathered thousands of signatures on behalf of Sheriff Finch. And their whole message was simple. Why are you attacking our sheriff when he's just defending our liberties? Well, in October of 2013, they had the trial. It was 3 days long. And it took the jury only 1 hour to find him not guilty. And I watched the news coverage of when he came out of the courtroom. Now, this is a strong man, but he openly wept. You can only imagine the pressure that was on this man. I mean, that was the end of his career, how he was going to provide for his family, like years in prison. That's what he was up against. But it's a great story of the doctrine of the lesser magistrate in action. The magistrate interposes against bad law, and the people rally around him and support him in what he's doing, and the outcome was awesome. He was found not guilty. 3 hours after he was found not guilty, the governor reinstituted him in his office. There, a sheriff, I believe he's still the sheriff of the county to this day.
Interesting. We got about 10 minutes left in the broadcast, Mr. Terrell. Is there anything that you want to hit on or revisit before?
Yeah, if I could. Just the importance of our families. You know, we live in the midst of a country where you don't have a government that's going to support you in any virtues, you know, regarding being a man, being a woman, being a husband, being a father, being a wife, being a mother. In fact, they've created policy in this country to destroy all that. you know, no-fault divorce, and then the phalanx of bureaucracies they've created to invade our domestic affairs, you know, seize our children, you know, on a mere allegation, and those types of things. It's obscene what they've done to destroy family in America, and the reason they've done it, and they've done it by design, is because every good statist knows that in order to strengthen the state, you have to weaken the family. And so they've, through law and policy in this country, by design, have weakened the family. Totally emasculated, man. I go out on the campuses and I stand out there and raise my voice and say, how many of you young guys know what your purpose is as a man? And I'm not kidding you, it's like deer in the headlights. That's like a question they've never, of course they live in a society that never wants them to think about those things, that does everything to blur to the distinctions between males and females. And so then I go into my little sermonette about how God's created you to be a provider, a protector, and a priest. And man, they get quiet. You can see it's still down there somewhere, even though this country's done everything it's going to push it into oblivion. They want to hear those things. And the young women, they're glad to hear that the young men are hearing. You can see it, you know, as you're talking. So it's pretty phenomenal. I encourage people to read a book called Family and Civilization by a man named Carl Zimmerman. Family and Civilization, Carl Zimmerman. He wrote the book in 1947. He is a renowned sociologist. If you know anything about sociology, and sociologists, they do one of two things with Christianity. They either act like Christianity had nothing to do with Western civilization for 2,000 years, or they had Christianity had everything bad to do with Western civilization for 2,000 years. Well, Zimmerman wasn't a Christian. He was just an honest man. And he shows in his book so much good that Christianity brought to Western civilization. And in his work in 1947, he stated that America would soon see divorce for any reason or no reason at all, which, of course, we have a no-fault divorce, late 60s, early 70s, that we'd soon see legalized abortion, which, of course, 1973, and that we'd soon see rampant homosexuality in our nation. Need I say more? He said that in 1947, and he based that on his studies of the Greek and Roman civilizations and the French and Bolshevik revolutions, along with other smaller societies and cultures. And he said, this is the demarcation line which brings nations or civilizations to their end, empires into the ground. He said this, he said, it's when the people no longer want to have children. And he said, I don't mean by that they only want to have zero. He said, although there are those. He said, what I mean by that is they only want one or two. And he showed how from the time the Greeks didn't want to have children until they fell to the Romans was 150 years. And from the time the Romans didn't want to have children till they fell to the Germanic hordes was nearly 400 years. Well, America has been in a steep decline for the last 150 years. In regards to how many children the average couple has. In fact, last year it was 1.88. Demographers say you need 2.10 just to replace yourself. And what drives it is men's desires to imbibe upon materialism and ease. And he said the reason that's the demarcation point when people no longer want to have children, that marks the demise of a nation or a civilization, he said, is because when men want to be husbands and fathers, and women want to be wives and mothers, it produces within people virtue. But when men don't want to be husbands and fathers, and women don't want to be wives and mothers, it produces within people vice. So anyways, I actually use this book because I've counseled over 400 couples as a pastor, and hardly any from the church I pastor. People like to go to another pastor rather than their own pastor when they're having trouble in their marriage, and word spreads that you do pretty good with that. And I use this book for the last 6 years now with couples who are having trouble in their marriage, because what it does is it pulls you out of our present milieu, because we live in a culture that does everything it can to belittle, to demean marriage and family in this country. I mean, you know, decriminalize adultery, divorce for any reason or no reason at all, homosexual marriage, come on. That's all designed to belittle and demean marriage, to make us think that it's not what it should be held in, you know, in regards to how we look at it. And so what it does is it pulls them up so they look at marriage and family over a 2,500-year period in the history, if you love history, you won't be able to put the book down. You might want to pass up the first 50 pages where he's talking about how he does all his research and stuff and just get into the history. But once you get past page 50, you'll be hooked. And
great.
So it's a phenomenal work to help people to understand their importance and the importance of keeping your family. While the whole world's crashing around you, you want to keep your family strong. You know, you want to keep your relationship with your spouse good, with your children good, band them together in Christ so that they stay true to Him and, you know, you don't collapse to all the pressures around you to destroy your family.
Got it. Mr. Trella, thank you so very much for being a part of our program. My goodness.
Yeah,
your books, your resources at your website, lessermagistrate.com, the information which you provided tonight on this broadcast, just invaluable tools to assist us in our fight against the perversions, the redefinitions, and the lawlessness that we face. I just want to say God bless you.
Yeah.
And we really wish you, our prayers are with you, and we wish you well. We know that you're going to be, well, you're at the tip of the spear in this fight. And we want to elevate your product, your books and your resources, Doctrine of Lesser Magistrates, to really, you know, bring us forward to get us victory. Man, it's great. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And I want to thank you for the time to talk to your listeners. It was a great blessing to me. So thank you very much.
God bless, my friend.
Thanks for coming on.
God bless you.
Well, you know what, folks? That, to me, listening to this, and I don't know, no one should really say, well, how can we fight this? Because, you know, the mantra, the false mantra that you can't fight City Hall, this Tavistockian product, you can't fight City Hall, that's not true. Now we can. I mean, we always could, but now we know how. It's through this doctrine of lesser magistrates. And don't forget, Greg Jackson has talked about this a lot, as others, including Coach Don Meyer. You know, any law that is contrary to God's law or the Constitution is no law at all. And that's right. And judicial supremacy, it's a lie. And we have the ability to change things through this. That's it. I mean, there you have it. So, good.
Now, don't forget, tomorrow night we have Augusto Perez coming on. He's not only going to be coming on to talk about some of the more prophetic and spiritual things happening in the world, the geopolitical situation from the Middle East to domestically here in this country. He's got a conference coming up. It's the Light in the Darkness conference. And folks, you can go to his website, theappearance.com. That's theappearance.com. And go under, if you want the information on the conference, go under the category notifications. And I'm sure it's under a few others. And there's a PDF you can download, or you can just go to the page, and it gives the details there. It's a Light in the Darkness conference, October 7th, 8th, and 9th. And this is at the Lighthouse Christian Center in Mayo, Florida. Mayo, M-A-Y-O. Mayo, Florida. And register for that conference, as Augusto does this frequently. And he has a fivefold ministry, and he is always doing his best to reach those who are interested and willing to be moved in this time through his ministry. Again, that's Light in the Darkness Conference, October 7th, 8th, and 9th, and he will be our guest tomorrow. Again, his website is theappearance.com. And if you didn't see who we had on this week on Monday, oh goodness, who was on Monday? Jonathan Kahn was on Tuesday, followed by Stan Dale. Yesterday, we had Anthony Patch and Doug Woodward. Coach Dave was on Monday. That's right. I don't know. It seems like Monday was a whole week ago already. But go back and check out the interviews all this week if you missed any of them, because they have been just one after the other, information-packed show. Even my mom let me know that she listened to the last Tuesday and Wednesday, and she said they were both fantastic shows. And I thought so as well. So go and check out those archives if you haven't already. They were great shows. And then next week, we have Dr. Michael Lake, Dr. Heiser, and then during the midweek, we got a special guest that's going to come on, and we're going to revisit some information pertaining to Obama and Loretta Fuddy.
It's going
to
be good. The information, the investigative work product by our guest next week, and you're going to see as the just watch HagmanReport.com, because it's extremely important. It's relevant to the Obama activities and his really his identity and the collusion and conspiracy by others in this reign, in this regime, I suppose. Folks, we just want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you for being part of our family, our extended family of listeners. Thank you for tuning in from Europe to Australia and New Zealand, Nova Scotia, all of Central and South America and the United States. God bless. Saddle for battle. Until tomorrow.